Make It Right, the manufacturing podcast.
Hi, I'm Janet Eastman, and welcome to the Make It Right podcast. This week, we continue our conversation about the role of unions in the 21st century factory. My guest is Jan Biander, who's held senior manufacturing and supply chain leadership positions in Europe, Asia Pacific, and the U.S. He envisions the role of unions evolving to a collective approach by the workers, the manufacturing leaders, and the union to achieve success for all. And that's where we pick up our conversation. What, as a leader, can you do to get the unions to work together to benefit everybody? I mean, the employees, the unions themselves, the business, etc. What's the perfect scenario here?
Okay, yeah. First of all, if we go back to the traditional environment or culture and leadership interaction with employees and unions, it's most of the time it's been direct communication with unions, and unions are going to employees are going to unions, and unions going back to employees. So the part which is missing here, and again, that's part of establishing a high performance organization culture, is the direct communication and interaction between company leadership and the employees, and basically engaging with the employees, making them part of the solution. What I've come across in quite a lot of companies is that the communication channels are not there. So at a certain moment, the unions are basically in charge of the communication between employees and the company itself. And automatically, you know, there's different interests there. So one of the important parts I have addressed that through is also making sure that there's a monthly employee town hall meetings where you get the interaction, where progress being shared, improvements, reward and recognition, Q&A with the employees, new policies and everything else. It's an investment of, you know, an hour on a monthly basis. And I found that very helpful because people understand what's happening. They share concerns about, you know, where we are heading. They come up with ideas as well. There's amazing ideas there. And then the other part there is, for example, informal luncheons by site leader with smaller groups of employees, mixed groups. I found that very helpful. Again, we get a lot of ideas coming out of that, but also concerns, rumors, which can be addressed there and then directly. And of course, the employees hear it directly out of the horse's mouth, I would say. Mm-hmm. And then, leadership presence on the floor and the participation in small group activities. And that could be, again, that could be TPM, AM, but the interaction there of total leadership on the floor, daily rounds, and rounds are not there to finger point on, you know, things which are not working. Rounds are there to interact with employees, are very, very important to change that culture. So we start with that. And then, of course, employees are feeling more engaged. They're starting to get in control of their own area and automatically start to become very vocal in where the company is going, where the leadership is going, and also the role they want to play in there versus doing that via the union. And a lot of time that's external union leadership who does not really have a good idea of what's happening on a daily basis and is sometimes not always, you know, directly positive towards good relationships between employees and leadership.
So if we start this from the top down, that's the approach that the leaders can take to turn things around. But if it's coming from the bottom up, what can the workers do to say, you know, we don't like the way this is set up? How can they push the change up through the union to the leadership and make their work environment the place that they want to be and be proud of, and where they can feel like they're accomplishing something?
Yeah, the problem there is if there's a disconnect in place between leadership, or call it management, and employees itself, it's very difficult to get you know, the concerns on the table and to establish that communication. Traditionally, the employees are going to the union, and a lot of times it's the concerns about pay and other things. And the other part there is, because if you're working in a multi-union environment, different groups are channeling their concerns or their interest to different unions. So again, the number one priority is establish the direct communication with employees. Make sure that the company understands and the employees understand that the interests of and the welfare of employees and the companies are inseparable. Start it that way. And then, of course, you get the environment that employees are starting to provide direct feedback to unions on the improvement of work environment, how we can work together to establish a challenging and motivating environment for the overall workforce.
Right. So in your experience, how long does this process take to make this change?
I would say to establish the thing like the open communication, I've done that within half a year. And don't forget, there's a lot of, I call it concerns among employees. Okay, this is the new flavor, because sometimes companies have tried that before. I think it's consistency. And within half a year, you can make a drastic change there. I think it's also important that there's a turnaround in culture and behavior of leadership itself. Leadership got to understand that money is made on the floor and not in a meeting room or whatever. Meeting room is basically a tool to communicate and make some plans, but it's all happening on the floor. And I've also seen that if you throw a lot of these meetings away and plans, spend a lot of time on the floor, you get this personal connection where, you know, you understand the family situation, the needs for training, where you help people and you accommodate that. Within half a year, you get a pretty fast impact on even on a conservative older workforce in a traditional environment.
Right. So moving forward, how do you see the role of unions in factories?
I think the union role is changing now to the next steps. I always compare, the past union focus on Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Okay, so and some of that is still happening in developing countries. So the past is all in around basic needs. Yeah, and that's food, clothing, which translates itself in pay, safety and security needs. People do not want to work in a hazardous environment, fumes and all the other things. And then, of course, you got love and belonging needs. And that basically is operating as a group. And that could be, you know, under the umbrella of unions, membership and affiliation. What we get after now, and that's where I want to make the point, that's where the union got to define their future role itself. Okay. And especially with the younger employees, change of direction, in companies as well. And, you know, there's no jobs for forever anymore. Mm-hmm. So then we're moving on to ego needs and people, you know, that's all around self-esteem, self-confidence. People want to be proud of their achievements. People want to gain knowledge. So the training part becomes very important, mandatory actually. Status, recognition, you know. People want to get recognized for their efforts and achievements. And I'm not talking about simply monetary rewards, because they're short-lived. Respect, you know, being part of a team. Mm-hmm. And then moving on to, of course, the self-actualization needs, the top of the ladder itself. People want to, you know, move towards their maximum potential. People want to be creative versus, you know, again, rules-driven. Individuality is a very important part. And again, the simplicity and self-sufficiency. And if you go and look to the high-performance work systems principles, you can find it all back. And I think it's important that the union starts to focus on where do we take it next, you know, versus labor disputes and money or other things. And of course, part of the job security is important, but that requires a change now.
Mm-hmm. So do you think, in your opinion, are unions in survival mode? And if they are, I mean, really, can we afford to lose them?
Well, first of all, I do not think at this time, or maybe even in the future, we can afford to lose them, because sometimes, you know, government direction, other things may have a negative impact on overall things like fair pay. I think with the current situation, especially in North America, deregulation of union membership, wage increases mandated by government versus unions, employee prioritization of employment and employability, as well as a reduced workforce, the income of the unions is changing. Mm-hmm. So if I look at also the financial health of the union's retirement funds, that's all very questionable at the moment. So people are starting to question the role of the union at the moment and the benefits for the employees itself. And that's why, again, if the unions are not making a drastic change and starting to work together with companies and employees and put the interest of them looking at training, employability and other things, yes, the membership, once it's deregulated, will diminish, of course.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, when we look at factories and the whole manufacturing process, it's like everything. It probably has an aging workforce, and there are more and more people that they will need to be attracting that are younger. And as you mentioned, you said, you know, they're not necessarily interested in just your simple basic needs and, you know, the belonging to a team and whatnot. They want to pursue a career, and they want to grow, and they want to move up the ladder. And in a union environment, the union has to help them do that.
Yeah, correct. And the training is a very important part there. If I look at the traditional manufacturing, had a lot of manual tasks in it. That's all disappearing. We move to automation. So, you know, workers or operators are operating complex equipment. They need training for that, and they want to be in control of their area itself. If I also look at for example, pension contribution, other things in the hands of unions at the moment. That's changing. And at the moment, the interests, of course, are with the aged employees. The younger employees are not willing to make large contributions while things like the pensions may go bankrupt in the future. So again, they got to move to a government operated system. So that's a huge change. And the younger employees at the moment in some areas may be a minority, but that's a growing majority. And that's very important for the future to focus on that for the union. So again, fair pay, employability, through training and engagement.
Jan, very interesting conversation. You've painted a really interesting picture for me. Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome, Jenna.
Jan Bjander is a manufacturing consultant and a plant manager. He has worked in various places around the world in global fast-moving consumer goods companies in Europe, Asia Pacific, and the US, and has had several assignments as plant manager. That is our show for this week. Thank you very much for watching or listening to the Make It Right podcast. I'm Janet Eastman. We'll see you again next time.